State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us on a rare Wednesday Tacky Talk time. Hey, Tacky.
Hey Joe, I'm glad you're able to make time for me midweek.
Happy to do it, and I see you are official in the office today.
Yep, I am in the office. It's always good to remind folks I do come in 2 or 3 times a week, depending on my schedule. As I've always said, we try to do in-person meetings or one full day at the State House, and then if it's a one full day of virtual meetings, there's no reason to leave my living room, which I mean my dining room, which all of you have seen. Basically, for 5 consecutive years, my dining room. It's just efficiency, right? I mean, why am I driving in rush hour traffic to get to a computer than sitting on my dining room table? It's a changing world. And this morning, I had students from Thayer Academy come in and talk about the impacts of alcohol abuse and their suggestions and public policies that could potentially help substance abuse regarding alcohol.
Ah, very good. It's always, I'm sure, always good to get students in. It gives you a new perspective on things, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a great conversation with them, and they share some personal experience, which I know is hard for folks to do that. And it's always good to see young people advocating for things they're interested in, and for lawmakers and other policy decision makers to hear from them and engage in actually a pretty good conversation.
So it looks like we've gone from like 0 to 100 on Beacon Hill all of a sudden. It was quiet, now we're ramping up.
Well, as the nature of this business, I think we talk about this quite a bit, where we're moving at high speeds, and then it comes to a dead halt, like you slam your brakes in your car, and then you're suddenly like not moving, and you're just waiting to see what happens next, and then you blink suddenly to hit the accelerator. So this week, today's the 15th, so the bill filing deadline is the 17th. It does not mean we cannot file bills after the 17th. They're just considered late file bills, subject to rules in House and Senate for acceptance. Bills that are filed on time of the 17th are automatically accepted by the Rules Committee and referred to a committee timely by the clerk, which would take approximately 6 or so weeks for the clerk to refer all bills to proper committees. Committees have not been formed. We do not have committees until we have rules. We have not had a rule debate in the House on the House rules, which governs the House functions, and the joint rule, which governs the functions between the House and the Senate jointly. So hopefully the Speaker's office will at some point schedule a debate, maybe in the next 2-ish odd weeks. And in the case of the joint rules, whatever we come up with, the Senate will be sent to the Senate, and the Senate will come up with its own joint rules. And then they'll have to do a compromise between the two sets of joint rules. Part of that includes establishment of committees. Right now, there is no committees.
Great. You wipe the slate clean, you start fresh.
That, yeah, I mean, I'm not a chairman. I'm just another rep until the decision made on who chairs what committees, what committee assignments are on. Yeah, but in the interim, people do ask questions about things that have been before my committee. And although I don't claim the chair title, I still act like and work like I am without the chair title, which is kind of funny.
Well, you still have the knowledge, regardless of the title.
Well, it's also a degree of expertise. I've
Yeah.
been here a few years, and this particular subject matter, as you may know, I've worked on since the days of Michael Morrissey. So there are very few people in this committee, and actually a few other topic matters in this place. Where I can safely say, I have about 25, 30, actually now 30 years, more safely to say, 30 years of experience working in this type of public policy. So in terms of expertise, it's going to be hard to find someone, and I'm not bragging. It's going to be someone at my level of years working on a topic.
You are a senior statesman now, Tacky.
I know, I don't know how that happened.
Well, I mean, think about it. It really fits in with the tradition of the city of Quincy. I mean, the Adamses both were, superior statesmen initially.
Well, that's true. But they were also really advocates too, long before they became senior
True.
statesmen.
That's true. Yeah. Well, it was a different time, of course. It was a revolutionary time.
Was, but I mean, the concept of I know we're talking about single white men, I'm sorry, white men Protestant landowners, but even in discussion of representation, impact of taxes, of how you should self-govern, the conversation on slavery, Abigail Adams's conversations about the rights of women. Which John Adams took very seriously himself. the conversation about how to be in relationships with in terms of engagement relationships, in terms of professional political relationships with Native Americans, and also foreign affairs such as the British and the French. These are big times that were groundbreaking because, one, you didn't have to deal with the stuff in Europe, right? These are issues you don't find in Europe. And secondly, it's a reflection of a continuously changing world. And the United States, in particular, is a constantly changing country. This is not a static country. It never has been since the days of the founding fathers.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. So I know we've talked a lot on this program in the past about the quote unquote millionaire's tax. And this week we got a glimpse as to how some of that might be used.
Well, the governor unveiled in a press release $8 billion proposal for transportation of a combination of bond and cash. Some interesting components of that includes using close to 70% of the millionaire's tax specifically to help the MBTA, but also use that money to leverage bonding, more bonding for transportation projects. As you may or may not be aware, we don't get loans unless we can pay our loans. So we need collateral.
Yeah,
For example,
exactly.
people don't realize that the Big Dig had $3 million, three, I'm sorry, $300 million, $300 million in collateral that was held by the then a Mass Turnpike Authority for the Big Dig. And Wall Street would only loan money for the Big Dig and offer a very good interest rate, if not for the fact it was a $3 million collateral put on the table that
Yeah.
would be by the state.
Yeah,
So,
banks want their money back.
well, that's absolutely true. And states are not considered safe investments for Wall Street, believe it or not. Given the volatility of income, because we're tax-driven, taxes are not a consistent source of revenue of any kind. We don't have a lot of alternative revenue sources, other than fees and perhaps some occasional lawsuit that we win through the AG's office on things done to the state. It is a very volatile system. And we did this already with the Rainy Day Fund. We took a portion of the interest earned as collateral and matching money against federal programs such as the CHIPS Act and other infrastructure acts that the federal government passed. We're using some of the interest from the, not all of it, some of it, from the Rainy Day Fund as leverage against those monies so we can get more federal money to the state because nothing's truly free. You got to match it. So, same thing here regarding collateralization of someone of millionaire's tax money to get favorable interest rates. And we're actually not in the highest interest rate environment, but we're in a higher interest rate environment, as well as uses a surety for Wall Street that we can pay our bills. And also the MBTA is not a new story. It's been going on for quite some time. It's I believe the number's ballooned to $700 million is the deficit hole in the MBTA budget sitting at about $3 billion. About one third of the budget continues to be paying off debt. So your commuter rail lines, the Green Line extension, I know it's largely federally funded, but it still has a state component. All the capital improvement in the rails you've seen, the new train cars, that's all debt driven. It's not cash paid for, and that's part of that 30% debt load.
Okay. Yeah, they've talked about the so-called fiscal cliff for a while now, and here we are.
Yeah, we are here. It's a even before COVID. There is a practicality. There's only so many seats in a bus and so many seats on a train or standing spots in the train. I mean, you're in there like sardines, as we always say in the train. At some point, you can't make more money if there's no more space. This is just logical,
Yeah.
logical economics. And I know the T over the years has cut back on services around the state on bus lines that are proven to be no one on the bus. These are things like the Charlie Card system and other systems to count people on buses. They're able to create more efficiency, but there is a point there is no more efficiency to be had in the train system as well. When you can't put more people on, you're not making more money.
Right. Yeah. And an exciting part about the presentation that I read, at least, was the increase in the Chapter 90 reimbursements to cities and towns, which could really help Quincy.
Well, what's novel about that is a 5-year program.
Yeah.
We've always done this as a session by session every 2 years of reevaluation. And we do actually have a debt ceiling, which is tied to inflation. And we've always put Chapter 90 outside the debt ceiling. We've always made that one exception to debt ceiling. It's always been Chapter 90. And just a little refresher for some folks, Chapter 90 is bond money that we will bond to give to cities and towns for road and bridge projects. So some of those local projects are paid by a statewide debt. And of course, the state will try to get the best deal on interest rates when they issue these bonds. City and towns can get some money. The city has traditionally gotten anywhere between 900,000 plus to 2.9 million, give or take, a bit, depending on the year, depending on how much Chapter 90 money we decide to do that particular cycle. So in the past few years, we've done about $200 million worth, which is like $1.8, $1.9 million to the city of Quincy.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
It's not a lot, but it's a lot too. I mean, it's still man, almost $2 million. We'll see. We'll evaluate the governor's proposal over a 5-year period. We may. I don't know how it's going to be taking in the building because we like the fact that we do it every cycle. We can try to evaluate our needs on debt against, unfortunately, some of our local projects as we go into leaner fiscal times, perhaps. We need more flexibility. And if we make a commitment like that, then we locked in a
Yeah,
segment of
I see.
our debt service.
Yeah, I understand. That's true too. Of course, right now there is no transportation committee, right? Or chair at least to get this going.
Yeah, until committees are formed, and then the speaker and the minority leader and Senate president and the Senate minority leader can make recommendations to the individual caucuses on chairs and individual members. So we're all in a bit of a holding pattern, waiting it out to see what actually happens next. Again, I have no idea what's going on.
Right.
Repeat that over and over again because I truly don't. As you all know, I have a lot of institutional knowledge of watching the history of this place, and trying to sort out my head where things are going. I truly cannot tell you where things are going. There's a lot of vacancies, including big committees like transportation, education, labor and workforce, economic development, as well as some other committees, such as veterans affairs and agriculture, which are not considered large committees for the purposes of bills. So we'll see how it plays out. And again, there's no guarantee the committees I name are going to be in the format they are. I mean, I think transportation, education. But over the many years here, the House and Senate has destroyed committees, merged committees, divided committees up. I mean, anything can still happen, negotiations between the House and Senate. And also vice chairs obviously are trying to look to move up the chairs. Chairs now are trying to move to more influential and chairs that have more bills before them because they feel they can handle the larger workload. Certain members think they're ready to do more work. And then we have two leader positions open, second leader and floor leader. And floor leader is what we used to call whips. So, you got those people and that the speaker needs to decide who's going to be part of the leadership team on those Monday morning meetings.
Right. Okay. One thing we know will be happening, though, that happens traditionally, is the State of the Commonwealth address from the governor.
Yep, it's tomorrow night. It's Thursday night. So, tradition every year. The governor will make a state of the Commonwealth or state of the state, depending on how you want to term it. It'll be broadcast on local news stations at the 7 p.m. slot. Actually, I was told to be in my, I think it's going to be 6 p.m. slot. I was told to be in my seat by 6:50. I mean,
Oh, okay.
5:50. Sorry, 5:50. So, and it'll be a bunch of folks, including the House, the Senate, the Secretariats, the Judiciary. Special guests, including foreign consulates, will be in attendance to observe. And the North Quincy ROTC, last year was at the governor's State of the Commonwealth inaugural address, the swearing in, which was great. But we'll see which local school ROTC will be there, and what other schools. Musical performances or whatever. I have no idea what's on this thing yet. I won't know the schedule to actually get to my desk. It will be on my desk. But they like to showcase talent from different school systems around the Commonwealth as part of this. And yeah, we'll see what she's got to say. We'll lay out her agenda. for 2025 for the legislature to consider.
Yeah, it's typically, speaking in very broad terms, very broad goals, broad strokes, not really specifics during this type of formal address.
Well, generally it's in three parts, right?
Yeah.
Part one is just introductions of people. Part two is, I call it the victory lap, all the successes they've done in the past year or past 2 years. And then they transition from the victory lap to the wish list, which is essentially the third part. And then you obviously do parting words, at the very end. But if you're following the score sheet, you kind of look at, that's how you kind of look at this program. The length of time they put into the wish list, so to speak, at the end, and what they like to try to get done, will give us a better outline of what the legislature considered that the governor wants. Obviously, a legislature can do things independently of the governor. We've done that before, but it's really more a suggestion and advice. Same thing of the budget. House 2 will be coming out next Wednesday, which I think is the 22nd, 7 days from today. And again, that is a recommendation. That's why it's called FY26 governor's recommendation. So I remind folks that the real decision makers is the legislature, not the governor. Some stuff that isn't there may reappear. Some stuff that is there may disappear.
Right. Now, at State of the Commonwealth, does the legislature also get a chance to speak, or is it just strictly the governor?
Strictly the governor.
Okay.
The Republicans have adopted the position of doing a rebuttal speech,
Yes.
which is actually fairly new. They don't always do it. They sometimes will, sometimes won't. This one time out, I believe, was Representative Marcus Vaughn from Mainville, or is it Rent? So it's that Plainville Rentham district. I can't remember which town he's actually from. But he's been asked to do the rebuttal for Republicans this year. And they'll keep it, under 15 minutes.
Sure. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. It's just fascinating to watch the whole process, because there's a lot of formalities to it, a lot of tradition I know that goes with it. So it's very much pomp and circumstance.
Absolutely. It's like the opening day of the State House and swearing in day. A lot of it is ceremonial. It's fun the first couple of times, but you do this more than a couple of times, it becomes, you could, you actually know exactly what's going to happen before it happens,
Right.
and try and do as efficiently as possible. And but there are some traditions have gone here for centuries. I still think there's a value to tradition. Reminds you where we've been, where we're going, and it's important for the beginning of the communication between the judiciary, I mean, the legislature branches and House, as well as the governor. That's the first day of communication, an official capacity.
Right, exactly. I want to talk a little bit about the emergency shelter situation, and now under Cory checks going on for some of the residents there.
Yeah, we all saw in the news, and we didn't know about this as well until we saw in the news, that the governor's folks have not done a good job on the core checks and review, and the documentation review process. We all know there's going to be mistakes. We're all human folks. I mean, some reason I'd like to say over and over again is expectation of perfection from humans, which doesn't exist. But this one obviously is a very clear failure and something that should have been very easily put in the basic, instructions for the governor's people on how to handle this with their contractors. As you also heard, the governor's looking for about $470-odd million more for the emergency shelter program. In Quincy, we do not have anybody in emergency shelter. The Welcome Center is no longer Eastern Nazarene College. It is moved to Bay State Community Services, which continues to be the lead on this matter. And folks in Quincy are shipped, for a better term, transported out to an emergency shelter. There is no one staying overnight anymore in the city of Quincy. It's strictly a daytime and then moved to an emergency shelter by the evening. But this continues to be a crisis, not necessarily just because of the migrant issue. But obviously, with residents and the impact of the economy, as cost of living continues to be high, even though it's starting to stagnate slowly, but it's still high. And unemployment rate in Massachusetts has ticked up to 4%, which is still very, very low, very low. But it's a sign that we're far cry from the 3.2% we were at the beginning of last year. So there is some pressure on the system, and we already are prioritizing Massachusetts families first, residents first in the system. But also say that talking to the folks at Basic Community Service, the migrant appearance rate at their welcome center is declining. It is not growing. So the budget, we put in about $500 million in the budget for the emergency shelter program, if I remember correctly, in that zone. So, you know, we had projected about $1 billion, the cost with the $470 odd million. Yeah, our projections are essentially correct. It's about $1 billion. She's looking to pull money out of reserve funds, which means it's outside the baseline budget.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure which reserve funds we're using, because last time out, we were using up the remaining of the ARPA money.
Yeah. So
the federal COVID stimulus assistance money was how we were filling the rest of the hole up for the emergency shelters. I think Representative Joe Moschino from Hingham, because she's the one that dug that up. I can't claim credit for that one.
Oh, very good.
But the I'm not sure how this is going to work just yet. Until I see the supplemental budget itself, I couldn't tell you.
Okay, so but that will need legislative approval also.
Yeah, the governor can't move money between accounts without our approval.
Okay.
So I always remind folks, when we talk about supplemental budgets or other kind of funding mechanisms, it isn't always looking for new revenue, but you actually can't move money between existing trust accounts. You also can't move money between agencies without the legislature's approval.
Gotcha. Okay, good to know. So folks can rest assured there will be some examination and debate.
Yes, there definitely will be some more closer look on these things.
Yeah. Did Bay State explain why they're seeing a downturn in migrants, Tacky?
It's unclear. I'm going to be doing a site visit to Bay State in about 2 weeks to see what's going on. I've visited Bay State in the past, so it's not like I've not been to the building. It's a combination of issues. I think there's a tightening on the borders. As the Biden administration has not continued to issue more visas.
Mm-hmm.
They've had, I mean, I think they're reaching kind of that limit. Obviously, there's a political element to this. You know, obviously, the Trump administration coming in and talking about massive deportations. We're not limited to that to just undocumented folks. They're going after people with visas. So you know, this is the untold story on that front, because particularly if you're on temporary visas, you know, you're still subject to the will of the federal government because they can be revoked. The same thing with green card holders, permanent residents, you could be revoked too. So we're not entirely clear, because every time you listen to a news report, it's always a moving target
mm-hmm.
about how they're going to, not just how, but who.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one thing, and then you listen to someone else, and they talk about something else. So it's always like, okay, which moving target we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, until the policy's in writing and you know, then examined, we won't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get too caught up in watching the news on that one too much, because none of the news broadcasts understand it. And even the interviews with various Trump officials have given mixed signals on what they're actually talking about. So for example, you know, a lot of Trump administration supporters were talking about mass deportation of all immigrants at one point. Then it became, okay, we won't let new people in. Then it became just undocumented. Then it became, well, undocumented and certain permanent resident holders. And it's just all over the place. And it gets worse once you get into social media, and it gets worse once you just like start believing anyone that talks to you. Wait until you actually see the implementation of the policy, not guess what the policy may be.
Right.
Don't respond to what's actually put down in writing and actually implemented, as opposed to trying to listen to a lot of different people giving conflicting results. The HB1 visa one, for example, right? You know, there was a huge anti-immigrant component of the Trump administration coming in, and they're going to end the HB1 visas and any kind of visa for people coming in. And of course, Elon Musk, and particularly the tech industry, especially tech industry, depends on HB1 visas for engineers and other computer scientists from foreign countries. And of course, Elon Musk basically flat out said that we're failures, which I don't think people noticed that. He just said we're failures in education, not producing more scientists and engineers. People missed that little part. He insulted the country. The way it's not really the way he said it, not necessarily the fact that we do need more engineers and scientists. It's how he said it is insulting.
Mm.
So you know, there was huge pushback, and you know, President-elect Trump stated that he's not going to change the HB1 visa program. So, you know, this is an example when you had to kind of wait out longer from two conflicting statements from the administration for the president-elect to make a final statement.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, as a lawyer, you know, words matter. Words on paper matter, right?
Yeah, actually, 100%. Then you have actions, and whatever they put on paper, they should follow it. And if they don't follow the paper, the order, executive orders, in particular in this instance, obviously there'll be lawsuits, not only challenging executive order, but also lawsuits challenging the fact they're even not complying with their own executive orders.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, right. Exactly. It's the
Depends on
old
suit.
adage, say one thing, do another.
Yeah, the suit you're going to see in the news with challenging these executive orders. The suits you never see in the news is non-compliance.
Right.
You're
With
never going to read the
their own
ones.
policy. Yeah.
Yeah, no news station's going to ever hear about a lawsuit against any president whose executive order is not in compliance.
Right.
Believe me, it's not like people aren't going to sue them for that, because if you say you're going to deport a certain type A in the executive order and you deport person B, which does not look anything to person A, you don't think there's not going to be a lawsuit going on? Of
Of
course
course, there'll be multiple. Yeah.
there. Yeah, you're just not going to see it in the news.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's so much that goes on that I'm sure that we don't hear.
Oh, absolutely, right? But it's common sense. You think your way through it.
Speaking of cost of living, Consumer Price Index came out recently.
Yeah, 2.9% came out this morning on CPI, and then core PCE, which is subtracting fuel and housing, was at 3.2%. It's down in expectations, but it's still very, very sticky. We're trapped, around the three zone on both numbers, and also not matching. Which is an indication that housing and energy is not driving the cost of baseline cost of living for anybody, right? The PC, what's interesting is that the biggest jump on cost of living is travel.
Oh, I didn't see that, really.
Yeah, airline industry is an interesting number. It's at 7%. It's one of the bigger spikes. It means that people are still traveling despite high costs, high debt in the credit cards, and also shows a restructuring of their priorities and spending. They're less interested in spending more on retail goods and more interested in spending money on vacation, essentially.
Yeah. Experiential spending, right? That way you have quality of life that you're more concerned about than, I don't know, the latest tech gadget.
And this is something that we definitely saw from post-COVID. Travel was very high. Retail was suffering, and restaurants were suffering. I mean, restaurants were good because experimental. So restaurants good, travel was good, retail suffered. And
Yeah.
retail continues to be having various challenges. The tech, for example, people aren't exactly buying the iPhone at the same pace they had on the new ones. You're not seeing people, you're right, buying brand new televisions at the pace they had in the past.
Right.
Recycling of new technology is a big part of economy. I mean, I'm talking a laptop computer here. That's my Microsoft service from the state. The state is notoriously slow on rotating technology. This is a device that I've had 4 years now. It's probably got a shelf life of maybe 2 more years before the components naturally burn out. And this is a high usage device I'm using here. The natural rotation of the devices is not moving as swift as people thought it would. Yeah, so it's not just consumers, there's also businesses. So, I mean, yeah, there's and energy prices, I won't say are stable, but anything can still happen. But the price of gas is still under $3 in
Yeah.
Quincy. It's well over $3, obviously, in high intersection areas like in Boston, because I take my mom to doctors at Tufts Medical. I go by the Pine Street Inn. That one can approach $4 or more, depending on where we are, what month we're standing in. But it's a far cry for close to $6 at one point. Well, Quincy was $2 cheaper.
Yes.
Obviously the gas prices change based on location. But yeah, I mean, gas has been fairly stable within a dime over the past 6 months. So, we'll see how it goes. I mean, energy prices are going to spike a bit. We've had the coldest winter in several years. I was talking to a friend about this. We've all picked up this respiratory cold. I did test no COVID, no flu. I do have a cold that's been badgering me for quite some time in
Yeah.
different weeks.
It's the crud. I call it the crud.
Yeah, it is the crud. But yeah, but also the temperature shift isn't great and has been very great in temperature shift. And we're burning a lot of natural gas. And home heating fuel oil is massively declining in Massachusetts. It's it's I think it's well past under 20% of the homes of oil based anymore. So, we're consuming more energy, whether it be electricity if you're using a heat pump, or natural gas if you're heated by that. Energy prices are going to take a little bit of a spike because of every use of both electricity and natural gas during the winter months.
Yeah, it's very much a supply and demand issue. It's a commodity, right?
It is, and there's only so much capacity. So, I mean, I know the Trump administration, I've talked about this in the past, this drill, baby, drill kind of model, which can't be done because with energy, especially fossil fuel energy, there's no place to store it at a certain point because they require carry reserves. So we saw that during COVID where they had massive reserves, but because energy consumption was so low because no one was driving and we're heading to warmer months, so you didn't need as much heating, they were actually rejecting cargo ships from the Middle East and other locales, and also slowed down pumping oil out of the ground in this country. Because once the tanks are full, you can't do any more with it. And they're required to maintain a reserve for obvious reasons, right? It's not like I have to explain that. So, the Trump administration, is looking to try to bring down inflation by flooding the market with more energy, because he actually likes solar and hates wind, but whether it be solar power or fossil fuels, there is a point where there's just no more capacity because once those reserve tanks are full, pumping more oil does not work.
Yeah, it's interesting. There are so many large swaths in this country that are still undeveloped. So, there is a peak for the energy need.
There is. I mean, you need economic development. I tell folks you basically need some basic, very basic things. You need an energy source, electric and generally natural gas, and then you need water and sewer. If you don't have those components, you can't do economic development. You can't do a new build. It's very simple. Even in Massachusetts, even though we're used to the fact that we live in an MWRD district, we have really accessible water, really accessible sewer. That's not the case everywhere in the state. Every community is different, whether they have well water or whether they have septic systems. It actually impacts the ability to do economic development because if you start tapping a large developer into the well system or a local reservoir, it actually affects the capacity for the remaining residents.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so much goes into it that folks don't think of. And it's still, I mean, really, in many ways, it's an emerging economy.
It is. Energy, you guys may be aware, I do pay attention to a lot of energy issues, and it is an emerging economy. It's not necessarily just fossil fuels, obviously, and not just renewables, but small-scale nuclear reactors are probably 10 years away. There's great efficiency on uranium. It is being recycled in Europe and in Asia. We're the only country that does not utilize uranium efficiently, nor go into that level of technology where you can expand, you not expand the lifespan by hundreds of years. You don't have to take it down to dump it inside a giant mountain when you can recycle it for hundreds of years. It is a very expensive upfront cost to build nuclear, no different from any other energy source, but you need a buyer. So you don't build like a solar plant with no buyer. You have the buyer before you build the solar plant. Same principle for energy.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. It's like building, you're not going to build 100 houses unless you have 100 people that are going to buy them.
And yeah, well, that's segueing into the housing crisis, right? After the 08 financial crisis, where they overbuilt, the next decade, they underbuilt because they didn't want to have vacant homes and put themselves into a potential situation over the 08 crisis. As a result, they've been underbuilding over the years, even with fairly low interest rates. And now we can't catch up as we move to a new generation of young folks who are looking for homes. So it's kind of a supply and demand issue. Energy and housing have that kind of similar situation where a vacant home means lost money and the developer's taking out loans to build said home but not recovering. Energy needs a buyer before you build. So, like I said, it doesn't matter if you're building a 500 megawatt, whatever size solar power facility, you need a buyer of that power. Otherwise, you're generating electricity in nowhere. Same thing with natural gas. If you don't have a buyer than natural gas, there's zero interest on finding more, putting in more natural gas in the system. If you're not putting an expansion pipeline to a buyer of said natural gas, there is no point to it.
I was reading a little bit about how the California wildfires are going to impact insurance across the country.
Yeah, this impacts insurance in a few different levels. One, obviously, is private insurance. And California is moving on laws and regulations regarding more mandatory type coverage of the current crisis that's going on there. I can't imagine losing not just your home, but your entire community in one blink of an eye. The fire moves back fast. And the winds are approaching, tropical storm level winds. We're talking like well into 70 to 100 miles an hour, blowing fire and ash, to find new dry timber. And it's wintertime over there too, and it's not the rainy season. And California does have a rain problem. So, it's just moving wicked fast. And we know fires aren't new in California. It's just the spread into residential areas where literally you're watching satellite pictures of what was there and now it's a charred mess. It reminds me very much of the Hawaiian fires, where literally an island community just lost everybody in their homes and dozens of people that were lost in the blaze. I'm going to tell you there's probably going to be more people that are going to find who aren't able to get out. Either they just didn't move quickly enough or they were have some physical limitations or something's going on there. It's going to get more tragic, I suspect. But you got two issues going on. You got that private insurance, which California is going to need to mandate coverage. And you also the underinsured, which is problematic because some people didn't carry insurance because they're not required under FEMA because they're not living in a flood zone or considered a dangerous area and they have no mortgage. So those of us in Quincy that have mortgages, mandated by FEMA to carry flood insurance, which adds a substantial cost to your home, let's call it. In California, there are a lot of retirees that live in those areas that have already paid off their insurance. So they got no insurance and lost everything in a blink. And the human lives can't be replaced. I get that. But I mean, you also can you replace a whole community from school to city hall to your playgrounds to your home? I mean, I
Replace a business. I mean, just everything.
yeah, the economic devastation on a personal individual level, because you have all your possessions. I mean, a lot of people keep things like their titles in their homes. It's not like everyone puts them in security deposit boxes. Even at the bank also burned down. So hopefully security deposit boxes able to withstand the fires. So you got to go dig out those security deposit boxes if the bank burned down. But a lot of us keep birth certificates, death certificates, wills, titles, all at home or in security deposit boxes. But most of us keep those at home.
Guilty as charged. I do, sure.
Yeah, so you imagine, on top of that, you got the tragedy and you got these logistical issues on top of that. And older folks like to do things by checking, not by online banking. The bills don't stop just because you're homeless.
That's right. That's that, you know, that doesn't often get talked about. That, yes, do you still have to pay your mortgage? Yes. Do you still have to pay your taxes? Yes. You
Yeah.
just
Yeah, they're probably going to get an IRS delay. I'm sure California lawmakers will do a delay on tax filing. I truly believe that. But it's already, you're already stressed. I mean, I just can't imagine. You're stressed out already. You're homeless. You listen to the various stories on realtors as well as Airbnb. Just besides everyone getting jacked up on the crisis and charging folks, there's also no vacancies. And then you got the day-to-day life comes to you too, and that just adds to the stress of it all.
Now here in Massachusetts, the insurance industry is regulated, right? That's not the case everywhere.
Not the same way to regulation. Everyone regulates their industries differently. I think it's the better way to do it. I mean, Massachusetts regulators actually regulate the price of insurance based on recommendations by the insurance industry and looking over the market rate and the impacts it has on consumers, as well as consumers being able to get paid out by insurance. So it's quite a complicated involved formula. Not all insurance companies want to do business in Massachusetts. And Massachusetts, also regulate secondary insurances. So GEICO is my favorite example, right? They're secondary insurance. They're not a primary insurer for most people. They're like primary insurer for like cars, but I don't honestly recommend it. I recommend you using any other insurance company for your car. I've had people and friends who use GEICO in car accidents, and it wasn't the best experience.
Oh, interesting.
The amount of recovery wasn't great, put it that way. So, the reality is that some states have different regulations. Another state that's having a massive insurance crunch is Florida. Their insurance rates have been skyrocketing, largely because of the tropical storms and climate change, basically flooding everything and people's homes. If you live in a coastal community in Massachusetts, where you see both the ocean taking back the land, that's happening in Florida too, and they're going to find themselves uninsurable at some point, and unless the state government intervenes, because states regulate insurance companies for the most part, unless the state government intervenes and say you got to start providing insurance to these folks, because a lot of folks down there are also retirees with no mortgage, so there's no FEMA insurance. But people carry flood insurance voluntarily. There's going to be a huge crisis of folks there who are going to be in huge financial debt or bankrupt from these massive storms and floodings in Florida. So, California wildfires hopefully is containable, controllable at some point in the future, lessons learned. At least try to reduce the size of damage. Places like Florida won't be the situation. It's going to continue to get worse.
Right. It's yeah. You can't move the state. It is where it is.
Yeah, and you're not going to relocate many people, right? I mean, same thing in places that are below sea level. We always talk about New Orleans and Katrina. It's a below sea level city. It's one of the few cities in the world that is in Denmark, where your city is basically already looking at the ocean above you. But there's a point where nature's going to claim you, and I think we can do that. I talked about this last time about the fact that climate change isn't just about windmills and solar panel and clean energy and finding new ways to plant more trees and other conservation efforts. It's also now about how we are able to live with a changing planet, and we're the only living creature on the planet that can change your environment to suit our needs to survive. So there's going to need to be an investment by government, all governments, not just Massachusetts. Every government's going to have to address this issue. And the private sector on future development needs to address this issue as well, but to prepare for down the road. And definitely, obviously, look at conservation efforts regarding where to build or not build new properties. Right? I mean, I live in a marsh. You guys all know I live in Black Creek Marsh. You cannot develop Black Creek Marsh. It is a huge flood zone. It's a catch basin for water. Furnace Brook ends up in my front. I look at all that stuff. If that wasn't there, the Marymount area walls and the area would be underwater on a regular basis.
That's right. Yeah, it's a natural floodplain. Yeah.
Yeah, not just basement water. I mean, literally underwater.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And probably 1,000 years from now, who knows? It might be.
Yeah, that may be true. My little neighborhood's built on this really curious piece of rock, and I can tell you, out in the neck. I've been on I drove around many places in the neck as well as other parts of the city, and you can tell where people build that one piece of rock sitting around a marshland that is solid enough to put it just above sea level, barely, in
Yeah.
some cases, so they can develop some homes. But down the road in the long term, that's probably not going to be practical. And in terms of new development, I mean, existing homes, existing homes, but a new development. That's why we have conservation laws, the Rivers Act. Obviously, in smaller towns, we have the septic laws regarding where you can build and how you can build. And we said earlier, you need water, sewer, electricity to in particular to make a development happen. So, and Cape Cod, I'm aware of the fact that the salt water is leaching into the underground systems that are made of metal, including water, sewer, and electricity. So this is not uniquely like a California problem or a Florida problem, but I mean this is a Massachusetts problem in the long run. And I was we had our forest fires too.
Yes, last year was the worst in many, many years. Yeah.
I don't ever remember forest fires like that in Massachusetts, but of course we're also New England, so 2 weeks later we had snow.
That's right. Yeah. So we get it all.
Yeah, it's a mixed blessing to live in Massachusetts. But me and mom were talking about this watching the news, and you can complain all you want about living here, but I really couldn't think of someplace else better to live.
Yeah, all in all, we're really very fortunate for sure.
Yeah, especially in Quincy. I mean, there obviously, I travel the world, but there's really no place like home, and the quality of life of Quincy is quite good.
I'm curious, have you heard anything tacky about the implementation of the ballot question that eliminated MCAS as a
Nope.
graduation requirement? No? Okay.
Still no emails, got no word from the Department of Education.
Okay.
We're waiting for something. We actually don't have an education acting chair even in the House.
Well, right. Yeah. Okay.
My good friend Denise Garlick retired from Needham. So she was the House acting chair. Jason Lewis is the Senate chair. All the committee doesn't exist, the acting chairs. And we've not heard anything yet.
Okay. I know that local school districts, including Quincy's, are waiting for some guidance. So,
Well, they may find out faster than I will
yeah,
because they don't.
they may, yeah. It's been coming up at the school committee meetings as questions that I just asked, so nobody really knows. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the things about communication at my level is that the parties are impacted first, find out before I do. Because they have to respond faster. It's not like I'm going to issue diplomas.
Right. No, I understand. Yep.
So it wouldn't be surprising if school committee and local committees find out how they're going to handle the graduation requirement faster than I will because the nature of the fact that they have to do implementation. I think
Right.
people have this misconception that, as legislators, we have like this, omniscient ability to find out what's going on. Where, as a practical issue, the implementers of public policy need to know before I do.
Right. Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. And now, is it taking effect this tw in 2025 for this class? Yes. Okay. So they need to know soon.
Then you know very soon.
Yeah. Okay. Anything going on in the district we should let folks know about?
Well, we talked about this a little bit last week. MLK Day is coming up on Monday. There's also the Democratic City Committee is doing a day of service. You can find a website about doing some things on helping on the food pantries this year. BC High, my alumni, is doing a MLK Recognition Day as well. Actually, the American, well, the Kennel Club, American Kennel Club's local branch is actually having an award ceremony. It's Saturday, found out. So I might be doing a quick hello at the cocktail hour. And
That's
then,
fun.
yeah, that'd be fun.
Do you have a
Just,
dog?
I'm not a pet person.
Oh, okay.
This well known, I'm not a pet person. So that's that's some events, on Saturday and Monday, and we're drop in on. And then we have set up a tour of the Welcome Center next month. We're doing that. Chili Fest, I talked about how's the Congregational Church, 1 to 4 p.m. If you like chili, I'll definitely stop in the mud on that. And then the Blue and Gold Dinner in House Nick for the Cub Scouts and Weebles are coming up also in February. So, I mean, things are picking up a little bit at a time.
Absolutely, yeah. It'll be Lunar New Year before you know it. Winterfest, the Quincy 400 Museum is open right now, the Old City Hall. It's really neat too.
Yeah, it was in the Quincy Sun this week.
Oh, was it? Yeah, I had a chance to see it last week. It's well worth the visit.
Yeah, I'll make some time when my next district travel around where I have, stay inside Quincy and I can sneak out of whatever video meeting I'm in and just pop on and plain clothes, so to speak, outside of this monkey suit.
Oh, undercover tacky.
Undercover tacky and go check it out.
Yeah. The neat thing about it is that there's a list of the names of all the people that were involved in the Quincy 300 back in 1925, and folks who've been in the city a very long time can actually see if their ancestors were involved in that celebration. One of our staff members actually found his grandparents.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's actually very cool.
It is. It's neat. Yeah. So highly recommended. It's a Joe recommendation. And it's free.
Definitely will take up that recommendation. Let me find some time to pop on through. What else am I doing? Oh, tomorrow I'm at Mass Hire. They're doing a little roundtable conversation about changing customer service issues. So me and John Keane is going to do a pop over there tomorrow as well. And before coming into the sales for the State of the Commonwealth address.
Oh, very good. Okay. Yeah, folks forget about that resource. It's a great resource, and everybody should take advantage of it.
No, absolutely. And it's also picking up, work's picking up.
That's good.
Well, it's bad because people need jobs.
Well, that's true, yeah. But it's good that it's there.
No, absolutely. I mean, we do have a lot of local resources available. I wish we had the R&D back in Quincy, to be honest with you. There's a lot of state agencies, in the Quincy. Actually, the R&V's headquarters is here. Just it's not an R&V customer site.
Right, yeah, it's up on Newport Ave, yeah.
And we do have things in the MBTA Police Training Center is actually on C Street, part of the Naval, actually, Naval Reserve location on C Street. Don't people don't realize we actually have a Naval Reserve location here. We do have a lot of different resources in the area.
Yes, there's a training ground for the fire department down at the shipyard, and of course, out on Moon Island as well. So, yeah, lots going on.
It's a city that provides locations for state and municipal services, including the right training centers are very important.
So here is the opportunity for you to let folks know how to get a hold of you, Jackie.
Well, as you can see, I'm room 42 for now until I'm told I have to go somewhere else. So I'm 42 at the State House. We are staffed, and there are more events coming around. And obviously, school started, but next time there's a school vacation week in February, definitely come for a tour of the State House. I always encourage it. So 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. Remind folks that I do not control the suite. The suite, it is the economic and development, economic and emergency technology, economic development, emergency technology controls the suite, not me. So that's the first thing you hear on the phone. So you have to be patient moving through the system. If a person at the front desk has any data or calls, Tacky Chan at mahouse.gov, T-A-C-K-E-Y dot C-A-J-N at mahouse.gov is the email. Obviously, I do read my emails, and the staff and I do regularly talk about what's coming through on requests. Tackychan.org is our resource page, but you also go to malegislature.gov. You can see bills being filed now. When we file a bill, it gets a docket number and pushed up onto the system. Then you have State Representative Tackychan Facebook, as well as at Tackychan on X. I'm hearing that X is getting a lot less traffic for me. People are migrating again out of different social media. So we're probably going to have to discuss internally about changing our social media accounts again and whether or not how much effort's going to be involved actually in doing that. And of course, we're here with Joe on QATV once or twice a week, the best we can. And obviously, catch Joe in the morning for his 10-minute podcast slash news update.
Thank you, thank you. And be sure and wave at the Estate of the Commonwealth. Maybe we'll see you, Jackie.
Well, it depends which way the camera's facing me. Obviously, I'll be wearing this suit, which will be everyone else in the chamber. I suspect a dark color suit. But I'll probably be wearing a blue shirt tomorrow. I'm not quite sure exactly what I'm going to do. I actually also need to get a new State House photo because the last photo I did for the state website was actually pre-COVID.
Oh, okay.
Just it dawned on me, like, I really need to update these pictures.
Yes, because I'm sure you look much better now than then.
I'm a little thinner. As much as I can say that much, but those of us who know me a year or two in politics, I do age. It just takes a little longer.
Well, we appreciate your time. We'll catch you next week.
And we'll see you soon.